everybody. Welcome to another episode of Courtside with Beilinson Tennis, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. As always, joined here by my co-host and Hall of Famer, Steve Flink. Steve, we are in Madrid. A lot going on. You ready to roll?
Absolutely. It's been a good start to the tournament. We're just about to head into the home stretch in the second week, but it's been a good last 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, and as usual, we'll start with Rafa, and I don't think either of us should apologize for starting with Rafa the last several episodes, just because, one, we don't know how much longer we're going to see of him, and two, all eyes have been on Rafa the last several weeks. Now that he's on court, we're thrilled to see him. And before we talk about this, and we're recording this on Sunday night, so before we talk about his rematch with Alex de Minaur, also want to mention Rafa announced he's playing Laver Cup in September. So we don't know if that will be similar to what Roger did as kind of a farewell event. We don't know. I don't even think Rafa knows at this point. Rafa had a couple years ago. And then he also mentioned in a separate interview that, yes, he would like to play doubles with Carlos Alcaraz in the Olympics. So possible two more times, Rafa and Carlos playing doubles together, Steve.
Listen, we can't be certain of any of it, nor can he. I think he has every intention of playing Laver Cup and the Olympics, but he's taking it step by step, as well he should. And I do think the worst case scenario, though, unless he's in really bad shape physically, he has some kind of severe injury, that he would play the doubles in Laver Cup, because that wouldn't be that taxing. And whether he would play only doubles at the Olympics, if that was all he was capable of, that would be an interesting. I think he would do that too, if that's what he was forced to do. But in the meantime, he's progressing so far in Madrid, which is terrific. You know, as we speak, he's already had two wins, and he's going to play his third round match tomorrow. So already the tournament's been a success on that level to get him those matches and have him stay healthy thus far.
Yeah, and I want to kind of present you with this scenario, because so far it's been very similar. The second match obviously went Rafa's way in this case, but in Barcelona he had an easy first match, very easy first match. He then played Alex de Minaur, tough opponent, right? His first one in a long time. Didn't go his way. This tournament, very easy first round match, beating Darwin Blanche. What was he, 16 years old, 6-1, 6-love. Wasn't much of a test. But Steve, he had a day off before he played Alex in Madrid. He didn't have a day off in Barcelona. That said, I mean, we know the result. Rafa wins 7-6, 6-3. I'll let you kind of dissect it how you said, but remember what I said about Barcelona? Ideally, I wanted Rafa to have a third match in that tournament. Here, when I saw the draw in Madrid, I'm like, hey, he may not get a third match again because he had the rematch with Alex. However, never doubt greatness, my friend. Rafa gets through, and I'll pass it on to you.
Yeah, no, it was interesting because it was sort of following the pattern of the match in Barcelona, a hard-fought, tight first set, which you felt was the winner was most likely going to come out on top in this confrontation. And this time around, it was Rafa who was up a break early and then had a little controversy, not his fault, with Fergus, the umpire. You know, it was a questionable call on the baseline. He tried to challenge a call on the baseline, was told that he'd done it, hadn't properly signaled it. And he was a bit worked up over that, understandably and justifiably so. But he ended up losing his serve in that game. And you thought that might be pivotal because he's up the break. He's now de Minaur gets it back and then breaks again. So de Minaur was up 4-3, 30-15 that first set. Missed a drop shot, double faulted, and then Rafa wins the next point and breaks back for 4-all. Crucial game. And then they end up going to the tiebreak, and Rafa is leading 6-2 in the tiebreak, double faults. And then de Minaur comes in and makes a nice little drop volley, and suddenly it's 6-4, and Rafa misses a couple of down-the-line backhands. He's just trying to roll, but good rallies, and it's 6-all. They change ends, and you see him go into the familiar Rafa trot, which is his way of trying to keep pumped up, keep the energy going, stay positive. It's a trademark characteristic. And we've seen it from him so many times. And sure enough, then on the 6-all point, he laced a backhand angle across court. It barely clips the net court, but stayed in. Now, would it have stayed in if it didn't hit that net tape? We'll never know. But he hit it really cleanly and well. He put his hand up and to acknowledge he thought he'd been a bit lucky, but it was a great, bold, audacious shot at the right time. Wins the next point, wraps up the set in 77 minutes. And then, you know, he broke Demon Orr at the start of the second set and again in the last game and was not troubled much on his own serve. That was welcome relief for him after the struggles he'd had on serve all the way through Barcelona and again here. But I will say this, David. He still wasn't getting many free points. He got none in the first set. He got a few in the second. Part of it is Demon Orr is such a good returner. He's got it all but the best. You have to hit an absolutely impeccably placed serve into a corner or on a line to stop him. But what was so impressive was the way Rafa backed up his serve, first and second. He was much sharper off the ground in this match. He mixed things up well. He played it more on his terms. And the other thing that seemed to help him, oddly, was that he's never loved the altitude. One of the reasons why he's won it a lot less times than he has Rome or any of the other clay court events, and certainly Roland Garros with 14, is that he's not wild about the altitude. Most of the players are not. He's got a lot of company in that regard. But in this case, he handled the high altitude much better than Demon Orr, and Rafa kind of taunted him into some errors, teased him into some errors by hitting these, rolling these back in returns and a little extra topspin on it, not too deep, kind of daring Demon Orr to step in and hit a winner or at least force him into an error. And Demon Orr was not sure enough of himself, in this case, in the altitude, and he missed a lot of those. And Rafa played a really smart match. Forehand down the line was great. Some more of those rocket backhand cross courts. Yes,
those backhand cross courts is almost like seeing vintage Rafa on some of those.
Yeah, so it was. He said afterwards to Prakash Amitraj that the first set was the key because he knew he didn't. He was very honest about it. He didn't say that he couldn't have won from a set down. He just said it would have been very tough. He knew he would have probably had to play two more hours.
Right.
If he'd lost that first set. And so it was very important, and we will never know, but he certainly comes away. It's a confidence booster. And now, frankly, I think he has a clear path to the quarterfinals as long as he doesn't get hurt, as long as the body responds well to that test the other day with Demon Orr. And then, you know, potentially maybe play Sinner in the semis and might even play Medvedev in the quarters if Medvedev gets there. But I like his chances, frankly, right now. And I wouldn't have said this pre-tournament to reach the semifinals, which it would be a great achievement for him. And then he could think about whether he wants to go on to Rome or not, whether he thinks he got enough out of this or he wants a few more matches or as many as he can get in Rome.
Yeah, I mean, you saw how much he wanted that match. And he knows he's really make a conscious effort of savoring all these moments because he doesn't know, not only we don't know, he doesn't even know how many more of these moments he's going to get. And you even saw him walking off court. He was like in the tunnel after the match and he gave like a little smile to himself and like a slap on the thigh when he already exited the court. You saw how happy he was to win that match. You talk about progress, Steve. And while you didn't win a ton of free points on a serve, the speed, the MPHs were up. And this is, I saw on tennismajors.com, the average first serve speed from Barcelona to Madrid went from 102 to 113 on the first serve. The second serve speed went from 87 to 95. So we're talking about progress. We're also talking about now he's in the meat and potatoes of the tournament itself. He's not just in one or two and then he's gone. Like he has, like you said, the draw has opened up. He can really get his feet wet in this tournament, feel what it's like again, competing in the latter stages of a tournament.
Yeah, no, that, I find this stat interesting because sitting there watching it, you didn't feel it. That's what I find interesting about that. I still felt that he wasn't getting a few more of those free points. And I felt it was much more about the way he backed it up, how good he was at taking control of the rally off some pretty good returns from Demon Orr. So, but still, that it's certainly those are the numbers that he's striving for. He wants it up in that range and maybe a little bit higher. Yeah. And then the next step is obviously to find the corners and to get a few of those cheap points against other top players. You don't want to have to always work that hard. On the other hand, I have to say, the second set, one game he was down love 30, a 3-2. He was already up a break. And he held with four straight points from there. Otherwise, he wasn't trouble on his serve really much at all. So that was a big change from Barcelona and a big change from the first set, because he did get broken twice in the first set. So it'll be really interesting to see how, because he said himself, I want to see how my body feels tomorrow. So he knows he hasn't been through this in a while. So he has to see. But it helps that, I mean, he might have, he's got a little bit of an opening there that I didn't see in the draw when it started. So, I mean, it's looking brighter in that sense, that maybe he doesn't have to even be at his very best as long as he's physically feeling decent to get to at least to the quarters, but more likely in my mind to the semis. So that was a big win, no doubt about it.
Awesome. And all tennis fans, their eyes are locked in on this. It's so great to see him back on court. Just keep him healthy. A few other interesting results that I wanted to pick your brain on, Steve. You know, Francis Tiafoe, he had that good result. You know, he's been struggling. He had that good result in Houston in the clay court event. We know that's a 250. It's not the same as a European clay court event with you know, a real deep field. But yeah, he did get to the final of Houston. He lost early in Madrid. He's just struggling. He actually has entered a challenger next week. That's the one good thing about these extended events, whereas if you lose early, you still have time to enter a challenger and play. So he's playing a challenger. He needs some confidence. On the other side of that, Stefano Tsitsipas had two amazing weeks. He lost early. I don't think there's any, I mean, he's played two really good weeks in tough tournaments. I'm not as concerned about Stefanos. I think he's still going to have a great clay court season.
Oh, I agree. No, he was a little stale. I watched that match. You could see it. It's pretty hard to keep it going, even though there were some days off between Monte Carlo and Barcelona, and then a few more days off here. You're still not getting quite enough rest time, particularly if you're winning the first tournament in the finals of the second. He would like, I'm sure, a very good Rome.
Agreed.
No, that would be helpful. At least say a semi in Rome is what he'd be hoping for. But no, that's not a significant blow to Tsitsipas. He's about where he wants to be right now.
I agree. And you know, we mentioned Tommy Paul last time that he hadn't been playing events since he, I guess, re-injured that ankle. Remember, he had that great semi in Indian Wells. He then injured the same ankle. When he injured it in Indian Wells, it was in a tiebreaker versus Medvedev. He then re-injured it in the early rounds of Miami. He has not played until just earlier today. I was glad that he didn't play until earlier today, because you want to strengthen up that ankle. He lost to Cerundolo, 3 sets, 6-7, 6-4, 6-2. His first event back, Steve. He does want to get some matches in, no doubt. But again, the fact that hopefully that ankle is strong now, it's not an issue, I think he'll be confident going forward and trying to get some wins heading in to Roland Garros.
Yeah, and he had a win before that loss to Cerundolo, who's a very good clay court player. So, no, it's not a bad start back for him. As for Tiafoe, I admire him for being willing to play that challenger. That's accepting the fact that he hasn't been up to his standard level. So why not try to pick up some wins and maybe even a title, so that by the time we get to Roland Garros, he's feeling more like himself. I think it's a very wise move.
That challenger is not your typical challenger. There's four top 50 players in there. Musetti's in it too, Steve. So this is not, I mean, this is a deep challenger. Like I said, I think it gives opportunities in these extended 1,000 events. If people lose early, they can still play another tournament if they want to.
Yeah. It's a good feel, but it's, you know, you could almost say it's close to a 250, but it's not like playing one of these 1,000s. And the opportunity will be there. And if he can just get through a couple of matches, he'll be dangerous again. I hope. This has been a very rough stretch for him.
A couple of fun matches for tomorrow. Again, we're recording this Sunday night. Ben Shelton versus Bublik. That's going to be entertaining. A lot of shot making from both parties. And Medvedev versus Korda. That's 2-2 head-to-head, and they always play close matches, Steve. You know, Seve beat Medvedev in Australia at the beginning of the year. They've had close contests in pretty much all four of their head-to-heads. How do you see the Shelton-Bublik match and the Medvedev-Korda match?
Yeah, well, the Korda, wins for both. He beat Medvedev at that Australian at 23 and then later in the year in Shanghai. And then he lost a close one to him. That's what made it 2-2 in the rivalry.
Yep.
At Indian Wells, was very hard fought and very tight three-setter, Medvedev winning it. It's a coin flip. I might lean a little Medvedev, but he definitely does not enjoy playing Korda. He's had a couple of good wins thus far, and he's looking pretty good. I would, that's not one you'd want to come down heavily on either side. I think it's very likely three sets again. Medvedev coming off a three-setter in the last round, obviously never at his happiest on the dirt. So while I think Korda is perfectly happy to play on clay, so I'm really looking forward to that one.
And Shelton Bublik, I mean, just shot making from both players.
Yeah, I think the key will be how well is Bublik able to handle Ben's serve. You know, this is in the high altitude. It's still it's a good server's clay court, if there is such a thing. And so I think he has a slight advantage. But on the other hand, Bublik drives everybody else nuts. He's a very unconventional player. I don't mean that as a criticism of him. I mean because his game is so it's so extraordinary and so unusual and so offbeat that you never know what's coming next with drop shots or going for bizarre winners or tweeners or whatever it might be. He loves to do things that are unexpected and break up his opponent's rhythm. So Ben's got to be prepared for that, and I think he will be. So I'm giving him, Shelton, a slight edge going into that match.
And then two matches on the women's side I want to discuss. You got the All-American battle with Coco Gauff versus Madison Keys. Again, just both Coco and Madison have been inconsistent at times. It's if both are playing at their best, who do you lean towards? And then the other side is, I guess, if just one player is really off, the other opponent's going to win. It's just hard to tell with both those players, because when they're on, they're both very good.
It's true, but I think that Coco can win without her best stuff. That's I think the difference. I think Maddie has to be at her best, and that's the kind of player she is. Coco is very good at pulling out matches where she hasn't played terribly well, but she's a very, very tough competitor. Not to sell Keys short as a competitor, but I feel like everything needs to be clicking a bit more for her. On the other hand, she likes these clay court conditions. She likes the fact that it's going to be quicker clay court conditions, gives her some help. I like Coco in three sets in that one.
And then a popcorn match, Aryna Sabalenka versus Danielle Collins. Sabalenka had a tough one earlier today, beat young American Robin Montgomery 6-4 in the third. She faces Danielle Collins. This person does not lose. She's now 15 in a row. A list of women's players to win 15-plus consecutive matches after turning 30. You ready? Chrissy, Martina, Serena, and Danielle Collins.
Yeah, pretty amazing. No, she's been on a grand. She's pulled out a couple of very tough three-setters from a set down again today. She did it, and that's not an easy transition for her after playing on her favorite hard courts and just getting started on the clay. So I think that's going to be a very tight match. I might favor Sabalenka based on clay court experience. I think she's a little more comfortable on the clay, but again, very narrow separation between the two. Most likely three sets in that match. And by the way, a quick word about Montgomery. I watched her play that Sabalenka match. It was terrific. She was blitzed in the first set 6-1, found her bearings, held serve all the way through that second set, outplayed Sabalenka in the breaker, went up 4-2, 6-3, and then Sabalenka saved a couple of set points on her own serve, but still Montgomery had the poise to close it out 7-5. And then in the third set, Montgomery was down 2-love and got it back to 4-all before Sabalenka closed her out. So I was very impressed. But I have a feeling that match is going to help Sabalenka for tomorrow against Collins. Whether it'll be enough to win, can't be sure. I mean, I give her a very slight edge. But I think the tough match will be of some benefit to Sabalenka.
Also, I want to mention, I saw Taylor Fritz this morning play Baez. He beat him handily. Taylor looked good. Again, I think maybe the altitude helps Taylor in this event. Are you looking for like Taylor to go really far and make a run at Roland Garros? When I say far, quarters?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I could see that with the right kind of draw. He's playing well right now. Let's see what he does here. Let's see what happens in Rome, what unfolds there. But he's very confident right now. He's talking about how he's been mixing in different elements into his game that he never felt he needed to try before, and throwing in moon balls and drop shots and things that he didn't feel he needed in the past. That's encouraging. He seems in a good state of mind. And I think over the last few years, he's improved considerably on clay. So that's why your question is an interesting one, because there's no reason with the right kind of path that he shouldn't get to the last eight at Roland Garros. And I believe that that's what he believes.
Well, this is going to be an interesting tournament. There's still so many great matches to be had. You know, again, these extended 1,000s, it kind of takes a little bit to get going into the tournament. I mean, there's already been so much, and you're still not, I wouldn't say, quote unquote, in the latter stages yet of the tournament. Obviously, a lot of news with Rafa and whatnot. Before we sign off, anything you're looking forward to this week? I hope you and I are talking about Rafa a lot next episode.
Well, what I'd be looking forward to would be, if I'm correct in saying Rafa makes the semis and he plays
a tough quarter. He's got a tough quarter, Steve. Potential quarter.
I mean, Medvedev does not enjoy playing him. I mean, I know they've had a couple of incredible five-set finals both of which Medvedev lost to Rafa in the 2019 U.S. Open again.
That was both on hard court, yeah.
Yeah, both on hard. But I'm saying, yeah, then to have to play him on clay. I mean, obviously, we know what happened in the Australian at 22. That was the heartbreaker. And I just feel like Rafa would – I would really like his chances, and I'm also not that certain. I'm giving him the slight edge of a quarter, but I'm not a bit shocked if Medvedev loses to Korda, and I don't see Rafa losing to Korda on clay. Hard courts, maybe, not on clay. So that's, if we can get a Rafa Sinner semi, that to me would be, right now, would be exhilarating. I don't think he would beat Sinner right now, but I just want to see how far he could push him in front of a partisan home crowd in Spain, and Sinner still trying to. Sinner, of course, is great on any surface, but if you had to say there was one court, you know, he still would prefer hard courts at this stage of his career, and he's coming off a loss to Tsitsipas and Monte Carlo. So I just feel like he's still trying to find his full dose of confidence, and it wouldn't be an enjoyable experience to hear that crowd coming on so strong for Rafa. So I would like to see it. I think Sinner would be the victor, but I want to see that match happen. I'm hoping for that match.
I mean, you still got Iga, you still got Sabalenka, you still got Rybakina. We always talk about that trio. We got Danielle Collins. We're going to see if she loses ever again. The men's side, again, you just touched on, we got a lot to look forward to this week. Who knows? I think we're going to be talking about Rafa, obviously, win or lose, how he does. But the best part about it is that...
David, just a quick comment. I'm also fascinated to see Carlos has had a couple of wins. He's been wearing a big arm brace because of his forearm injury. And he's been talking about how he has not been able to hit full force all out off the forehand. And you can see it. He's not steering it, but he's not blasting away with his usual abandon almost. So I'm fascinated to see what he can do. He seems to say he's feeling better just because he's wearing that brace. I guess they're still working on the arm, and he's starting to feel stronger, and maybe it's less of a burden than it was, but let's see where he goes in this tournament. He is wisely making Sinner the favorite and talking about Sinner being the favorite. But I think, you know, it's a title that he's won in the last 2 years, and he very much wants to make it a three-peat. So I'll be watching Alcaraz very carefully as well, and then hoping that the issue with the arm disappears.
I agree. And, you know, we're talking about all these great players and matchups ahead this week. We're not even talking about Novak because he's not in the field. You throw Novak into the mix, the field goes to the next level. So hopefully we get everybody playing as we head into Roland Garros, and we get to see a great culmination to the clay court season in the next, what are we, early? We're almost early May. So, you know, another 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks at most. So a lot of good stuff to come up on both the ATP and WTA side of things.
Yeah, and just and also we still have Zverev in the mix as we speak in Madrid.
He won
too.
A good one today against Shapovalov. That's right.
Yeah, good win, and he is just about as good on clay as he is on hard. If you asked him to pick one surface, I don't know which one he'd necessarily choose. He loves playing on the clay, so I'll be watching him with heightened interest as well.
I agree. This was a lot of fun, Stephen. And, you know, obviously our next recording, we're going to summarize everything that happened this week. So thanks for your time. I know you're looking forward to this week as well as myself. And I think tennis fans across the world.
Thank you, David. I enjoyed it.